The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We are getting very disturbing reports of a shooting at a Minneapolis Catholic church. Governor Tim Walz saying that a shooter was inside the church in Minneapolis.
This does sound to be significant and serious. They're being told that there are, quote, multiple casualties here. We don't want to talk about any numbers yet or any possible fatalities, but we are told this does sound to be very significant, very serious, with multiple casualties reported.
By this horrific act of violence. This is a school that has goes back to 1923. It is pre-kindergarten through eighth grade, and they have had an all-school mass scheduled at 8:15 a.m. Wednesday mornings.
This is the third deadly shooting in about 14 hours that police have responded to in Minneapolis. This shooting happened at around 2 o'clock this morning along Hennepin Avenue when police say a gunman approached a group of people standing on the sidewalk and shot them at close range. As yeah, we know one man is dead and another man is hurt. As we mentioned, it has been a very violent night here in Minneapolis. At 8 o'clock last night, officers responded to a shooting in the city's Whittier neighborhood. MPD says one person was killed and another was hurt in a shooting just outside of an apartment building there. No arrests have been made in that shooting. Just about a mile from there, there was another shooting. This one happened in broad daylight yesterday afternoon. Dash camera video capturing the shooting where police say a man with a rifle opened fire on a group of people. And we know police say the gunman fired 30 rounds, killing one man, hurting six others. Thankfully, all six of those victims are expected to survive. Investigators say the shooter left the scene in a car, and police are still trying to identify him.
Minneapolis police were pretty strapped. It just gives you an idea of this city's resources and how they've been using those. Some of the busyness, I guess, that you could say that Minneapolis police are under. But clearly, a lot of agencies now coming in to help.
They're strapped. You might have heard them say there in that montage. So they were a little slow to respond to this morning's massacre. We don't know the numbers yet, but the gunman knew about the mass and the gathering of the entire school for the prayer session. And yet another horrific act of violence playing out in one of America's big cities. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at our Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. TD@thetrumpet.com is the email address. So lots to get to on today's show. This, of course, just breaking news from a little bit earlier this morning. And as you just try to wrap your mind around the daily headlines and stories that we try to roll through on this show, this morning a couple of themes emerge. You see the sickness in Israel, and it's not just in America, it's in Britain as well. This little girl wielding a knife and a machete, that's been in the news this week, and the migrant that evidently was coming after her and her sister, I guess. We'll look at the sickness in Britain in just a bit as well. But then together with that, you have the marathon cabinet meeting yesterday. And when you listen to, you know, President Trump and all the members of his cabinet, I mean, you would think that America is, it's never been better. And again, there are some improvements. There is a temporary resurgence. But as we keep saying, it's lulling us into a false sense of security. The sickness is still there. Now, what do? We send the National Guard to Minneapolis as well. Well, the first stop was supposed to be Chicago, following D.C. But then, as I said earlier this week, I mean, you as refreshing as it is to see law enforcement cracking down on thugs in the nation's capital, what about the thugs that are in nice suits? What about the thugs working in the capital? What about the thugs in the deep state that tried to destroy Donald Trump for years and years and years? And none of them held to account? I think we've got a montage of that last one you guys sent me this morning about the cabinet meeting yesterday. Go ahead and play that.
Since the inauguration, we've created over 500,000 new private jobs. And if you notice, when the numbers come out, government jobs are going down and private jobs are coming up. And that's what really fuels the country. Meanwhile, we've reduced the number of federal bureaucrats by 84,000. So we got rid of 84,000. And I think the job numbers, you're going to see the new job numbers are going to be through the roof because of all of the different businesses that are moving into our country. And not just production businesses, autos and AI, but any business you can think of. We have the Olympics. We have the World Cup coming. I got them in my first term. And I was really sad because I said, oh, boy, I got them and I won't be president. And little things happen. Thank you, God. Thank you. No, little things happen. Think of it. You could ask Johnny. Johnny would tell you he's the head of World Cup. He's a great guy, too. Great commissioner. But he's the head of the World Cup. He said, Trump is the only reason we're doing this. And the sad part is that I was not going to have it. I would have to be. Probably I wouldn't have even been invited to the game, depending on who's president, right? I just want to tell you, our country's in incredible shape. Our military is strong and powerful and respected. We had some fantastic decisions from the Supreme Court, and we've had a lot of great decisions, and we've all made some great decisions sitting around this table.
I mentioned over the weekend all of these significant anniversaries and milestones for God's church and also for the nation. America turns 250 next year. The 250-year anniversary. But we've been talking also about the 40-year anniversary of Mystery of the Ages and the anniversary of the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, and how that these two books perfectly bookended Herbert Armstrong's ministry. I mean, he was converted to the truth in 1926, early 1927. And he had the manuscript for the U.S. and Britain in prophecy done in 1928. And that identifies our nations in prophecy. And more important still, it gives you the sure word of prophecy regarding our nations, regarding what's about to come upon our people. And it's not good, so much of it. God did intervene to save us temporarily. But look at the sickness and the sins that are still all around. They're everywhere. Can you just send the National Guard to every single city and the problem's solved, the problem's over? No more homelessness, no more crime, no more sickness and disease? There's certainly nothing wrong with upholding law and order. But then what do you do about all the white-collar crime? The stealing, the thievery. I mean, the illegal spying. Traitors! As I mentioned yesterday, I mean, it's in the latest trumpet. Barack Obama's been exposed for treason. That's a capital crime right there. And we were talking about treason years ago. In America Under Attack at thetrumpet.com, in our magazine. You can get free copies of all this, by the way. Subscribe today. There's no cost, no obligation. You see the 800 number there. Tomorrow's news today. You know, I mentioned the thugs in nice suits. Senator Grassley, he represents Iowa, I think. He's the longest standing senator in Washington. He was on with Miranda Devine. And listen to what he says in passing about just exposing everything about the Russia hoax. Obamagate, really, that's what we should call it. The illegal spying, wiretapping, all those things that went on, the illegal investigations to try to harass and prevent Donald Trump the first time around from doing his job, stealing the election. They didn't really get into that, but you could add that to the storyline as well. Listen to this exchange between Grassley and Devine, clip one.
So I'm chairman of this Judiciary Committee doing my oversight work. I want to make sure that the public knows how Trump was mistreated, and I don't care whether anybody ever goes to jail over it or not. I hope if they're prosecuted and they're guilty, they go to jail. But right now, I just want to make sure that the world knows how Trump's been treated since he the very minute he came down that elevator.
Now, he's a nice enough guy. He's a Republican, been around a long time, but mistreated? And then I don't care if anybody goes to jail or not? Is that the strongest? Is that the strongest rebuke that these criminals are going to get? These traitors? I mean, you ask them. Miranda Devine has to be the one. She kind of keeps coming back and saying, well, is anyone going to go to jail? Well, is anyone going to go to jail over this? This was illegal. They're lawbreakers. They're lawless. It's part of their agenda. That's like Herbert Armstrong said about the communist infiltration. I mean, in the end, you got to bring down the government to carry out your utopian vision for America. Your communist takeover, really. Is anyone going to go to jail? Well, I don't. What did he say? I don't care whether anybody ever goes to jail. Okay. So the problem won't ever be solved. If there's no punishment, well, you're just left with every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. You're left with Judges 21, verse 25. The U.S. and Britain in prophecy, I mean, we're coming up on the 100-year anniversary when Mr. Armstrong set out on that project. There is no greater warning for our nations today than that book, Mystery of the Ages is like an extension of it and an even deeper dive into why Israel. You got U.S. and Britain in prophecy identifying our nations in prophecy and then telling you what is prophesied, the sure word of prophecy. We've been playing the installments from the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, our documentary series. It's a powerful warning. It's needed now more than ever. And yet you listen to some and they talk as if, hey, everything's great. Listen, we've finally exposed all this evil. Now, I don't care if anyone goes to jail or not. But look, we've closed the border. I mean, D.C. is safe. We've got all these good things happening. We're eliminating these wasteful jobs. False sense of security. Don't be lulled to sleep. We just had another mass shooting. Violence, crime and violence, and they were slow to the scene, law enforcement, because they've been so busy, because there's so many murderers on the loose. And we were told not that long ago by Democrats who were in charge that, hey, that's fine, just give them space to carry out these violent acts. And there's still a lot of deranged Democrats that think that way. They don't want, you heard the clips earlier this week on the show, all of these Democrats screaming about the National Guard being in D.C. It's a police state. Donald Trump's a dictator. And on it goes. Like drones. Listen to this from President Trump and then the reaction to his upholding law and order in D.C. This is number 12.
So the line is that I'm a dictator, but I stop crime. So a lot of people say, you know, if that's the case, I'd rather have a dictator. But I'm not a dictator. I just know how to stop crime.
We were founded in opposition to a standing army, with a fear of a standing army. And the military is not supposed to be used for ordinary law enforcement purposes. And he's trying to militarize our society, intimidate his political opponents. The whole idea of picking cities based on their partisan leadership is absurd. I mean, there are lots of Republican cities and towns struggling with crime. Everybody is across the country. Always, crime has always been part of our history.
The military serves a role to protect Americans, not to be used against Americans.
Exactly.
You keep saying used against Americans. What kind of Americans do you mean? The ones that are murdering us, carjacking us?
We haven't even mentioned war zones like downtown San Francisco after 7 o'clock where I work, or Hollywood or Los Angeles where I work 2 months of the year. They are war zones. You can't walk outside at night, period. I don't give a if it's the Army, the National Guard, the FBI. I couldn't care less, and I can guarantee you 80, 90 100% of the people there don't care either. They just want to walk outside.
So why are Democrats taking such issue with the president's crackdown on crime?
Part of the problem is that most of our cities are run by Democrats, and various issues that Democrats have pushed in recent years are correlated with some of these increases in crime. Popular support for having cities that do not have so much crime, it's a notable thing, and it's going to be a challenge for Democrats going forward.
You would think that Illinois would have such a problem with crime, such a bad governor. He should be calling me, and he should be saying, could you send over the troops, please? It's out of control. It's out of control.
So he's got a fight with the Illinois governor, who's a Democrat. We don't want the police. We don't want the National Guard. Chicago's dangerous. You heard the guy O'Leary talking about San Francisco after 7 p.m. You don't want to go out alone. Not in the big cities. And then on the one hand, you hear someone reporting on the Minneapolis massacre and, well, we're kind of short-staffed and we, you know, they're stretched thin because there's so much violence. And I would imagine the good Democrat governor in Minnesota is going to tell Donald Trump, no, thanks, but no thanks. It's all about politics, you see. As I say, Miranda Devine, she keeps coming back. Like, is anybody going to go to jail? These people are guilty. They're insurrectionists. They carried out this rolling coup for years. Listen again to Grassley with Devine, clip two.
Do you think that anyone will go to jail? John Brennan and Jim Comey now have been...
Too early to tell, but I'll tell you, what they did to keep Trump from getting elected president, and then particularly after he was elected, early on, before he's even sworn in, did everything they could to get him out of, with the hope of getting him out of office. Or if they didn't get him out of office, ruining his first term. And I think they accomplished that through that Russia, Russia, Russia stuff.
So maybe they'll go to jail?
I'm going to let the process plays out. I'm not a judge and I'm not a jury.
Well, you've been in there since 1981. And if it's worse than Watergate, if it's worse than anything you've ever seen, if you were there when Reagan was in office, and then the first Bush and Clinton, and then Bush again, the son, and then Obama, the dear leader, then the fake president, now Trump, we've never seen anything like this. Is anyone going to go to jail? Well, I don't know. That's not for me to say. You've seen all the evidence. As I've said before, with respect to whistleblowers, where were they a few years ago? In Congress, all these revelations coming from Tulsi Gabbard, and we had to wait until this year. And so many of these congressional representatives, they've seen this. They've seen the evidence. They saw it years ago. But, you know, can't say anything, can't leak it, can't reveal the truth. And now they're all excited. Republicans, they're all excited. Hey, we can finally reveal everything. Is anybody going to be held to account or go to jail? Well, I don't know. I don't really care about that. You don't care. The spirit, you see, of lawlessness, it just permeates the air. We're not tough on crime, whether it's white-collar crime or the crime that's happening in the streets of America. It's pretty amazing to just consider the sickness from top to bottom, and you see Isaiah 1. It's all over it, whether it's here or in Britain. It's head to toe, through and through. And the sickness in the head, I mean, that's like a type of the leadership, the government. Okay, so the thugs aren't roaming the streets of D.C. as much as they used to. But they're still showing up on MSNBC, MS Now and Then, CNN. Yeah, paid a lot of money writing tell-all books like John Bolton, Jim Comey. I did think this was interesting, just talking about the strength. And again, you read this in the Trumpet. You read it in January when Donald Trump was coming back. Miraculously, they tried to kill him. They tried to send him to prison for 700 years. This is worse than mistreating Donald Trump. Excuse me, mistreating? They tried to murder him. And then we didn't learn anything about the shooter, did we? He just disappeared. Yeah, his whole family history, all of his political connections, he disappeared just like the Las Vegas shooter. Now, it'll be, if it's a transgender or some direct, like the Nashville shooter, if it turns out to be something like that here in Minneapolis, well, they'll disappear as well. But now if it's a white nationalist, we'll never hear the end of it. This is the way they work. There's corruption everywhere. As I said yesterday, I mean, it's in the media. How could all of these corrupt, treasonous traitors, how could they have gotten away with this? And then in the end, when it's finally exposed, you've got the grand old party there to say, you know, we're finally exposing it. Is anybody going to go to jail? I don't really care about that. You should care. We're seeing our society unravel. This was that exchange. I just wanted to squeeze this in. This is Grassley acknowledging, as you read at the Trumpet in January, that Donald Trump is in a much stronger position than he would have been had they not stole the election in 2020. Clip 3.
So you perceive a different Donald Trump this time, a more effective president.
Oh, if he had served from 20 to 24, his presidency probably wouldn't have gone down in history as anything very great. But I think now his presidency will look pretty darn good compared to the other 45 people that served in that office.
Tomorrow's news today. Make sure you subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. Only God could take all of that corruption and lawlessness and turn the tables as miraculously as he did. It's a miracle that Donald Trump ever returned to office. But people are missing the point on why God did that. It's not because we're going into a golden age. Just look at the streets. Look at the nation. Even the shakeup, I think this was in the Trumpet brief this morning, the shakeup at the Fed with Donald Trump firing that gal, I forget her name, but I mean, he wants to spend. He's got to have the big, beautiful bill and all the funding and do more borrowing, whatever it takes. They are, I mean, like you heard yesterday on this show, he's maintaining quite a pace. Marathon cabinet meeting, I think it was Jesse Waters that said the previous president probably couldn't have stayed awake for that 3-hour marathon. As it is, they're going right around the table. And if you just take what they're saying at face value, you could conclude that America's never been better. A lot of people think that. And then the mass shooting happens. I've been wanting to get into this from the Wall Street Journal. It's by Andrew Roberts, the British historian. And he's talking here about why the far right hates Winston Churchill. It's really just pretty stunning to watch this play out. I mean, the radical left, peaceniks, you can see why they always hated Churchill. But now, I mean, he's on the receiving end of a lot of hate coming from Tucker and Daryl Cooper and some of these others. It says here, the accepted historical, well, let me skip ahead to where he says, the American podcaster Daryl Cooper, who has never written a history book, let alone one about World War II, but whom Tucker Carlson calls America's most honest historian. That's Tucker's assessment. It's incredible, really. Not in a good way, I mean. It's unbelievable. He's never written a history book. He's never written on World War II. And yet Tucker concludes he's America's most honest historian. And Andrew Roberts, I mean, he can hardly believe it, has claimed that it was Churchill's fault that the war escalated from a limited one that Adolf Hitler apparently wanted when he invaded Poland in September 1939. Evidently, Hitler wanted just a limited war. That's kind of like, you know, Putin you know, Biden said if Putin just goes in a limited way in Ukraine, that's okay. That's okay. There's people that actually think this about Adolf Hitler. It says here, according to Cooper, Churchill was the chief villain of World War II rather than any of the more obvious suspects. Not Hitler, not Stalin. No, it was Churchill, the villain of World War II. It says there are a number of problems with this theory, not least chronological. Churchill did not even enter the British government until 2 days after the Nazis' invasion of Poland. He gives quite a lot of detail here. I won't go through all of it. Joe Rogan, some other guy, a British historian, David Irving, said, you know, he's excited. I'm glad the message is finally getting out there from Cooper, from Tucker, Joe Rogan. Cooper's remarks on Tucker Carlson's show led the Holocaust-denying podcaster Jake Shields to conduct a poll on X asking, who is the biggest villain of World War II? And among his almost 136,000 respondents, 40% gave that distinction to Churchill. Out of 160,000, yeah, Churchill's the villain. How far removed are we from this history? 1945, so that's what? 80 years. 80 years on. We're not even a century removed. And there's more books about Churchill out there probably than anyone but Abraham Lincoln. But look at how the history is just being wiped away. And a lot of very prominent, very popular commentators are sending a different message. And Andrew Roberts explains why. He says, in the simplest terms, it's because his practical aims and principles as a leader of the West were directly opposed to the new strain of isolationism in America and Britain. See, if we just isolate ourselves, the problems will go away. If we just don't meddle in the problems of anyone else in the world, we can make our country, our nation great. Here at home, we can make America great. We can make Britain great. Then you look at America and Britain, and we should be getting a wake-up call. There's no call for repentance. It says here, today's revisionists project their views about Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Iran backward through the history and denounce the leading global interventionists of yesteryear. They blame Churchill, along with Franklin Roosevelt, for escalating the conflict with Hitler, and thus associate him with an effort to confront today's aggressive tyrants. See, because we shouldn't do it today, we shouldn't confront tyrants today, we shouldn't have done it in 1940 either. And so Churchill's the villain. Churchill escalated the conflict. I mean, some of the things that passes for commentary these days, it's frightening, really. I gave you that quote before, someone that said everything could have been solved in the 1930s if we just had more podcasters then, like Tucker Carlson, to talk to Stalin and FDR and Hitler and Churchill or Chamberlain before him, as is brought out here. I mean, Churchill only came in at the last minute. Britain reluctantly said, well, okay, let's turn to Churchill. He's the only one that will fight. The push for appeasement then was so strong. And in some circles, it's even worse today. Just don't do anything. You can sit down, like I said earlier this week, and reason with anyone. A madman, you can bring Stalin to the table after Hitler's demise, and we'll live in a peaceful world. That didn't work out so well. And today we're making a lot of the same mistakes. Robert says it's worth considering what might have happened had Churchill not urged those fateful choices. If Britain had remained neutral in the West and refrained from bombing Germany, Hitler would have been able to concentrate his entire Luftwaffe against Russia. Instead, he had to hold back 30% of it to guard against Churchill's bombers. In other words, Hitler could have won. And what kind of world would we be in today Well, it's hard to imagine. When you look at the world today, in some ways, it's hard to imagine it being any worse. Certainly when you just consider the spirit of crime and murder in our cities, it may be we're not living under fascism, as Hitler would have imposed upon Britain and America. God didn't let that happen, but that surely was the sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And it came very close to taking over the world. And look at what's happened to America and Britain since. All of that industrial might and power coming into the war after Pearl Harbor, and the U.S. and Britain fighting together as brothers. Yes, it was a strange alliance in some ways to bring in Russia too, but, you know, it was, in Churchill's view, the lesser of two evils. And now you have people just completely revising the history. And here's a British historian who's trying to keep the record straight. And so many in Britain, in the United States, they just won't accept it. I mean, this is another kind of sickness. There's so much of it to go around politically. Violence. This video of the girl in Britain. I didn't bring a clip of it because there were so many curse words, but at the Federalist, it says, by now you might have seen a video clip circulating on social media of a defiant and terrified young Scottish girl wielding a knife and a hatchet to fend off the advances of a migrant man who allegedly had been harassing her and her younger sister. You can hear the fear and the anger in their voices, a mix of desperation and rage and confusion. You can also hear the man's voice taunting them. At one point of the video, the girl cries out, "Don't touch my little sister. She's only 12. It says, you might have also heard how the story ended. The police arrested, wait for it, the police arrested the girl for possession of a bladed weapon. They didn't detain or even investigate the migrant man. Not interested. Listen, is anybody going to go to jail? Well, I don't really care about that. I'm just doing my job as a senator. Or in the case of law enforcement in Scotland, listen, the knife here is the threat. The weapon is the threat. There was a guy that tweeted out this morning after the Minneapolis shooting, for those that would say, we need more prayer, his response is, hey, prayer is the cause of the problem here, because we don't take action. In other words, in his mind, taking action means taking guns away from the law-abiding citizens, not the criminals. Let the criminals have their knives, their guns, their everything. Go, and in this case, go after the weapon. And who's holding it? Well, the 12-year-old girl, who evidently is being threatened. Nothing is done to investigate the migrant man. He can come into Britain and just roam in the country, no problem. Here again, yet another form of a sickness that's not getting, it's not going away, it's getting worse. What are we doing to ourselves? This is die by suicide, as Lincoln said. We're killing ourselves. It says the entire sordid history of Britain's civic collapse, stretching back decades to the Rotherham rape gangs scandal and forward to today, is in some ways contained in the striking image of this wisp of a girl with a knife and a hatchet in hand facing down a predatory migrant. She's clearly desperate, abandoned by the adults who were supposed to protect her, sold out by the political leaders who were supposed to maintain the cohesion and safety of her city, reduced at last to brandishing crude weapons to defend herself from foreign men brought to her native land against her will. Just open the borders. We had quite a bit of that during the fake presidency and in the years of the dear leader. And there's a lot of it in Great Britain, as it's just being overrun by strangers. That's how the Bible describes it. That's talked about in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. As I say, there's no greater warning for our nations than Herbert Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. What is prophesied to come upon our peoples, our nations? Well, you see the sickness, you see the curses. You see the countries overrun by violent criminals, gangs, rape gangs, sex traffickers. It's a scene that encapsulates the total loss of legitimacy of the British government and a portent of what comes next. Civil war. I mean, Britain has fallen. Commentators can see it's broken. And they're going to see that soon in America as well. Even the MAGA movement is going to see that, you know what? We can't bring these two sides together. We're never going to see eye to eye with Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders and AOC and all of these Democrats that love crime. I mean, you heard Jamie Raskin say, hey, crime, I mean, we've lived with it. It's part of America. I mean, I guess it's like baseball and apple pie. Crime as well. We're used to it. Just settle in for a little bit of good crime. Don't send in the National Guard, though. That's scarier. That's a lot scarier. Well, it's not exactly a sign of health and prosperity and vitality and strength. But at least it cracks down on the criminals roaming the streets. Here's this migrant man filming it and egging her on, taunting her. And the British authorities go after the girl. Now, maybe this girl comes from a dysfunctional family. Wouldn't surprise me at all. But like this article brings out, where are the adults? Where are the parents that are supposed to be protecting their children? Then you have to get into even deeper root causes. Family living. Family breakdown, divorce, stepdad, stepmoms, broken families, broken homes, single mothers, young girls coming out of single parent homes, so many of them, vulnerable to these rape gangs in Rotherham or wherever. And then the authorities just, I mean, this is not something that's just happened a month ago. This is a decades-old scandal. And here again, is anybody going to go to jail? Well, I'm not really concerned about that. I don't really care about that. What? And so the problems worsen. The sickness spreads. It says, worst and most stomach-turning of all, the British ruling class has failed to adequately acknowledge or take appropriate action in response to the Pakistani rape gang scandal. A scandal which is ongoing, a festering wound. Interesting the way it's described. A festering wound in the British body politic. Just this week, Rupert Lowe, a member of parliament and the chair of the rape gang inquiry, released a statement saying the inquiry had identified 85 local authorities in which the gang-based sexual exploitation of children is taking place or has historically done so. The inquiry, says Lowe, has identified patterns of targeted exploitation by predominantly Pakistani males, Muslims, in other words, combined with gross negligence from public bodies. Can't go after the Pakistanis. That would be Islamophobic, you see. See how it works? Strangers, taken over by strangers. And they're bringing their standard of morality, or lack thereof, into our countries. They're bringing in their religion. They're bringing in their culture. And as a result, Britain is dying. Most telling, however, was the map that Lowe released with his statement showing exactly where these rape gangs are. They know where it is. British leaders, British authorities, they know where the rape gangs are. It should come as no surprise that they are mostly in working class, economically downscale regions of Britain, where deindustrialization has gutted entire communities, created high unemployment, high rates of child poverty, and left young British girls vulnerable to predation by Pakistani rape gangs. They're thriving, the rape gangs, and Britain is dying. All of this is intolerable. It is too much, and it will lead inexorably to rebellion and bloodshed and war. I mean, how much longer? This is a sobering take. How much longer can this continue? How much longer can it go on before Britain just erupts in civil war? Commentators see what's coming. They see a nation that's dying. They see a nation that's completely broken. And Herbert Armstrong in the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, he forewarned this almost a century ago. He said our sins are going to bring us down. God gave us all the wealth and the prosperity and the power. I'm talking about Great Britain and the United States in particular, because of promises made to Abraham, our great patriarch Abraham, because of his obedience, because of his righteousness. We were the recipients of fabulous blessings from heaven above. From the early 1800s right up until the end of World War II, miraculously saving Western civilization through a series of miracles at Dunkirk in Normandy. And then what happened? Mr. Armstrong in the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, he says, look at what happened right after that great victory with the Korean War and Vietnam and so on and so forth. And you go, as we do, and he was right, you go all the way through up to today, and you see, even with a temporary resurgence that prevented Satan from blotting out even our name, we came that close. We were hanging by a thread. Donald Trump said as much in the cabinet meeting yesterday. He said, had I not returned last fall, I mean, our country was gone. That's how close we were to a total demise. And so God intervened. And there's a temporary resurgence at the moment. But why? What for? What's the message that God wants for us to take away from all this? Just switching back to Britain, listen to this report about all these little children being sent home from British schools because of racism. This is clip four.
Children as young as four are being sent home from school for racist behavior. Suspensions and expulsions rocketed in schools, doubling from 7,000 incidents to over 15,000 this term year. Reception class children as young as four, including 15,000 reports, which led to pupils being sent home. What is, I guess, I don't even know where to start. Can after all be racist? Maybe let's start there.
The fact that there's this overreaction in schools, I think, stems from two things. One is a kind of definitional expansion whereby all sorts of things are being labelled as racist. Schools are under a certain amount of pressure to keep records of all such incidents. That's largely through Ofsted, the pressure's coming from, who want everything recorded.
But I would also point to some other stories that have taken place this year. We had some schools that had sent children home for wearing a Union flag dress. That comes to mind immediately when I think of this story. And many people and many of our audience will ask, is there this sense that inside the educational field, teachers and so on, are becoming so ideologically polarised to perhaps British values?
That I'm not saying that all teachers are wholehearted subscribers to this, but there is definitely the education profession, along with academia, has been at the centre of a cultural project of stigmatising British history and British cultural achievements. There is no doubt about that. That's partly intentionally through the political commitments of those in those positions of power and authority in these institutions, and just unthinkingly of just going along with, we won't celebrate Easter because Easter, of all the Christian celebrations, might be offensive to the refugee children we've got coming in, joining school next week.
Yes, we've got to be sensitive to the refugee children. And so we're going to expand our definition of racism, for one. I mean, we've gone woke. And so incidents have gone from 7,000 to 15,000. I mean, we're just sending four-year-olds home right and left because they're racist. A four-year-old. I mean, this is a crackdown that makes no sense. And then you've got the rape gangs identified. Their locations right there on a map. And they're allowed to roam freely. In this other article, I went through the Federalist. This from Politico. Gloom is in fashion all over Britain, and the nation seems deeply skeptical. Its year-old Labour government has any chance of making life better. And so here comes another government. It's just like a revolving wheel, a merry-go-round. In comes a new party it's more of the same. Another failure. It's a sickness from top to bottom, isn't it? That's what Isaiah 1 says. And again, there's no greater warning about what we're seeing, about what we're experiencing, than the United States and Britain in prophecy. If you don't have a copy of this book, we're going to be drawing a lot of attention to it, as well as Mystery of the Ages, over the course of this year and even into next year, as we go through so many of these anniversaries. And as you know, if you've been watching the last few shows, I'm just trying to get to the number, I guess we'll have number 18, which will be the sixth installment of the U.S. and Britain in prophecy documentary. We'll leave enough minutes here at the end for another segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and enjoy this installment of the documentary.
Could the Holy Bible have some sort of hope for the crisis that is consuming America and Britain? To find out, we are putting the Bible to the test. But we're not the first ones. Many British and Americans have looked into the Bible to find meaning and purpose for their nations. Some studied the promises God made to Abraham. They looked into history and found that his descendants did, in fact, form a nation, Israel. But that nation lasted only a few centuries. The Bible, the one book you would expect to record those promises being fulfilled, records instead that the nation of Israel ceased to exist. The God of the Bible promised that Abraham's descendants would become numerous, would spread around the world, would colonize, would control global transportation routes, would become a great nation and a great company of nations. That God also promised that the second king of Israel, King David, would start a royal dynasty that would literally never end. One of those who studied some of these Bible promises was an early American patriot, Thomas Paine. He read the promise to David and compared it to Israel's history, and he concluded that the promise had been broken. Many others, before him and since, have done the same thing. After all, the Bible itself recorded that Israel was conquered, its king was deposed and imprisoned. If that promise failed, then the Bible has failed. But is it possible that David's royal line was not broken? Before it was conquered, the nation of Israel included 12 tribes. One of those tribes was Judah. At first, Judah was the only tribe that King David ruled. Several years later, he finally became king over all 12 tribes of Israel. David's son Solomon ruled the same 12 tribes. And Solomon's son Rehoboam ruled these same 12 tribes, but not for long. The people of Israel petitioned King Rehoboam to repeal some of the heavy taxes he was enforcing. Rehoboam refused, so the nation rebelled. This led to a disaster for the monarchy. Almost the entire nation revolted against the throne of David. The nation of Israel rejected King Rehoboam. They inaugurated their own king, a man named Jeroboam. He was from the tribe of Ephraim, not from Judah. Almost all the tribes of Israel tore away from David's throne. The tribe of Ephraim, the tribe of Manasseh, the tribe of Reuben, the tribe of Simeon, the tribe of Issachar, the tribe of Zebulun, the tribe of Dan, the tribe of Naphtali, the tribe of Gad, the tribe of Asher. There was none that followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. Eventually, the tribes of Benjamin and Levi joined the tribe of Judah. But the majority of Israel rejected David's throne in Jerusalem and set up a new throne in Samaria to the north. At this point, Judah and Israel were two different nations. Most of Israel was not ruled by the throne of David. The throne of David only ruled the tribe of Judah, along with Benjamin and Levi. These tribes had to secede from Israel to remain loyal to the throne of David. The northern nation, with most of the tribes, was still called Israel. The southern nation, with David's throne, was now called Judah. They were now two separate nations. In fact, the very first time the Bible mentions the word Jew, the Jews are actually fighting Israel. The term Jew is a shortened form of Judah. Jews are people from the tribe of Judah. And the first time the word Jew is recorded, the Jews are at war against Israel and Israel's ally, Syria. So what does all of this mean? It means that the Jews are not Israel. It is true that all Jews were Israelites, but not all Israelites were Jews. Just like all Californians are Americans, but not all Americans are Californians. Israel is the name that referred to all 12 tribes that descended from the man named Israel. After those tribes split into two nations, the Bible never refers to the Jewish nation as Israel. The name Israel continued to refer to the nation with most of the tribes. These two different nations continued to exist for generations, one to the north and one to the south, one called Israel and the other called Judah. Why is this so important? It's because this is the exact point in history that even many Christians don't understand. When they think of Israel, they think of the Jewish nation. In fact, even today, the Jewish nation in the Middle East is called Israel. But the Jews are only a small part of Israel. So, what about the promises? God promised national greatness to the descendants of Abraham. To David, he promised a royal dynasty that would last forever. But rather than becoming great, Israel has split instead, north and south, and most of Israel has seceded from David's throne. Is it still possible for all those promises to be kept?